Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Hope your Tuesday is going well. We've already had a pretty loaded show, honestly. Bobby Barak swung by. He is one of Outkick's media writers. Does a really good job. He was with us in the second hour of the program. My guy Lance Taylor, 94.5 Jocks down in Birmingham. Been doing daily radio there in that state for a long time. And we're about to be joined by Paul Kaharsky, who is an NFL Hall of Fame voter, a writer at Outkick, soon to be writing at Outkick on a regular basis. And we're launching a new radio show that will involve him and Chad Withrow and Jonathan Hutton, who you've heard on this radio program as well as a part of the Outkick Over the Top Network. All that stuff's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm excited about it. But as we went to break there, I was talking about the U.S. women's soccer team and their decision to basically say, we are done with kneeling during the national anthem. And the same thing is being said by English Premier League soccer members. I grabbed a few quotes from that story as well, which I thought was so interesting because the English Premier League has also been dealing with their own situation surrounding protests and the way to draw attention to things that they're concerned about. And many of the players in the English Premier League are now saying, well, this kneeling business is just kind of a distraction because everybody's talking about the kneeling and they're not paying attention to the larger context. And we're ready to move to actually taking tangible action as opposed to basically a symbolic act. And I saw it echoed here in the U.S. women. And I think the larger context here, is this is not a statement that anybody cares about if there's not a rebellious factor to it anymore. And when, as I was going to break, and I'm saying when Ben and Jerry's is coming out with their own protest ice cream, it ain't very protest worthy anymore because the man is on your side. And if you go study rebellious movements, as soon as the mainstream buys into the rebellious movement, it's over. It doesn't have any more punch, any more power, any longer, because the mainstream sucks up the counter-revolution and makes it a part of the new revolution. And this is actually what happened in the 1960s if you go study everything and how wild it was in the civil rights movement with all the hippies, with the anti-Vietnam protest. We're living in an era right now where basically instead of Vietnam, I think you can plug in COVID, right? The COVID pandemic. And you had Donald Trump and you had all the controversy and all the athletes and all the cultural and social conflict. And then you toss in social media and that kind of created its own potent cocktail of just craziness, right? That is the word that I think most people would use to describe 2020 was just crazy. Now, there's other adjectives associated with it as well, but the one that I think is emblematic of everything that went on is just it was a crazy year. It was a year without precedent. Well, that's a lot like 1968. And what happened after 1968 is a lot of people decided, you know what? I just wanted things to get back to normal. And that was Joe Biden's entire campaign. Joe Biden was basically like, hey, I'm just an old dude. I'm going to get things back to normal. And I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but that really was kind of the same campaign that Richard Nixon ran. After all the craziness that had been going on in the 1960s, Nixon campaigned on law and order. Now, Trump tried to campaign on law and order. The difference was he had COVID and he was the incumbent, and it's harder to campaign on law and order when you're the incumbent. It's harder to say, hey, I'm going to be the change agent when you're already in a position of power. But I think all of this is rolling together in a sophisticated and interesting way, in the world of sports. And without an obstacle to protest, protest isn't cool anymore. It's not rebellious. And even Colin Kaepernick himself, he's got all these different deals, Nike, Ben and Jerry's. He's making his own Netflix movie. He's not very rebellious of a character anymore. When you cash in, Colin Kaepernick's got his own SPAC. Did you see that? He's got his own SPAC. A lot of you don't even know what a SPAC is. He's raising money to be able to make more money. He's sold out as much as you can sell out. Now, I don't mind. I'm a capitalist. Sell out as much as you can, but a lot of people start to say, wait a minute. You're telling us how awful America is, and you are cashing in, making tens of millions of dollars, running around telling people how awful America is? How many countries in the world can you get yourself filthy rich in by telling people how awful that country is and companies just throw money at you? Colin Kaepernick's like, steps up to the mic. He doesn't hardly say anything. He's like, America is evil. And Netflix is like, here's $1 billion. Speak truth. Keep speaking your truth. America is an awful place. Nike's like, amen. Here's a shoe. Colin Kaepernick's like, I am overcome by the awful inhumanity of America's history. And Ben and Jerry's is like, preach it, brother. Here's your own ice cream. The way that big companies have just totally dove in to the woke movement is actually going to destroy the woke movement. And I think you're seeing it with the U.S. women. They're like, well, Donald Trump's not president anymore. Nobody's really that mad about us kneeling. Why are we doing this anymore? And it's, I mean, really, it's amazing. People forget, remember, Colin Kaepernick started his protest when Barack Obama was still president. People want to all connect it to Donald Trump. But one reason I think Donald Trump won was because of Colin Kaepernick's protest. He was the candidate running against Hillary Clinton in August of 2016 when Colin Kaepernick started his protest. And I just think what's happened is all of these big multinational corporations have bought into protesting and protesting so hot, and we're going to have social justice warrior commercials. And it's really not very cool then. Again, as we went to break, I was like, you know, Huey Newton and Stokely Carmichael, the original Black Panthers, who Colin Kaepernick is patterning himself on in some way, like, they didn't have an ice cream flavor. Malcolm X didn't get a tennis shoe. Like, they were true rebels. Corporations have co-opted whatever Colin Kaepernick wants to say, and now they're making money off of it, and they're giving him money in the process, and it's hard to feel like this is anything other than a new way to sell product. When LeBron James got equality written on his sneakers that are made by slaves in China, and people don't even make the connection, the company is just pulling the wool over everybody's eyes, and they don't even know what's going on. And they're like, man, I'm so glad to support all these woke corporations. And all these dudes are just getting filthy rich off being pretend woke. It's wild. And I think that's what's going on with the U.S. women. Up next, we'll talk more NFL. Paul Kaharsky.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Bring in Paul Kaharsky now, and I'm curious what he thinks the future of audio is. I may get into that a little bit with him. But his show will launch on March the 15th as a part of the Outkick Over the Top Network. Excited about that. Paul is a Hall of Fame voter in the NFL. He has been covering the NFL for a long time now. I want to start with this question for you, Paul, because we've kind of been talking about it a little bit. Do you believe that we will be back to full stadiums by September in the NFL? And I ask this question because the NFL Hall of Fame game, assuming it's going to happen, I still think there's a lot of questions to figure out about what exactly the preseason is going to look like in the NFL, as in theory they're expanding to a 17th game in 2021, and maybe they'll limit some of these games in general. But in theory, I believe it's on August 5th The Dallas Cowboys are scheduled to play against Pittsburgh Steelers. That would be the first game to take place of the 2021 season. And in Canton, Ohio, they said they hope to have a full football stadium there and are planning for it. Do you think we'll be back to normal by regular season in the NFL 2021?
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea. I'm obviously hopeful like everybody. You know, I would think baseball's got a chance to be, I don't know about full, but close to full outdoor, you know, heading towards a lot more vaccinations. And
my theory for baseball, I'm curious what you think about this, is basically with the All-Star game, because I think every different state is going to have still different rules and different cities are going to have different rules. So you may have, like, for instance, down in Texas, I think they'll probably have a lot of fans present. I think in Florida, that'll be the same thing, for instance. I still think California and New York may be more restrictive. But I love the idea of the All-Star game in Major League Baseball being a, hey, sports are back to regular experience in mid-July, whenever that date is officially set. It may have been set already. I feel like we could have a full stadium for the All-Star game this year in baseball. And for a lot of people, that being a return to normalcy moment for the first really big event, right? Because if you're going to a game for the Florida Marlins and they're like, hey, we're back to full stadium and there's 8,000 people there, or the Tampa Bay Rays, you know, they're like, hey, we're limiting attendance to 25%. The Rays are like, that's amazing. You know, we're never 25% full, right? So those kind of places, I feel like, are not going to be able to sell full attendance tickets anyway. But I feel like there's a lot of people who would want to go to the All-Star game. That could be like a, hey, we're back moment in mid-July. If you look at the trend lines, that seems like a reasonable idea.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. You know, and like you say, it varies park to park. NFL, we know every stadium would probably, for the regular season opener, be full. Based on NFL hope and on the eagerness to get back in there, even if you're terrible. I mean, everybody spends the whole offseason selling hope, but even, you know, for a team that's going to be really bad next year, people would want in the building, I think, just for the experience of getting back in the building. And David Baker has been big on that, you know, because that Hall of Fame game, those are two teams that are huge draws that would bring people who've got Hall of Famers going in. And then that whole Hall of Fame extended weekend features massive inductions because it's last year and this year, but last year was the centennial class. So what is it? It's 15 extra guys plus two classes of seven spread over 2 days. They've got to, you know, minimize the talking. I think everybody's going to have 5 minutes, and they're just going to cut them off. It's going to be very strict, but it's going to be a real football festival. And, you know, it'd be a, you know, like a lot of things have been a shame. It'd be a real shame if they didn't have people. But I got to say, you know, as somebody that's been on some flights, and I know things are going to change, sitting elbow to elbow with somebody, it has a completely different feel to it now than it did before. And I don't know, you know, person to person.
It's interesting because I was talking about this on the show Monday, and I said, look, I'm getting on. We got snowed in. I'm going to ask you about that because you're from the Northeast, from the North, like my wife. And anytime you get a snow in situation in Nashville, it's kind of interesting. But I said, look, we're flying out of the country. We're going to Mexico on Wednesday. And so tomorrow I'll be getting on an airplane. If you told me, hey, which seems more uncomfortable to you, and I bet also the larger American public at this point, being enclosed in a tube in the air flying with no, you know, officially circulating air, as opposed to sitting in a Major League Baseball stadium outdoors on a sunny day, like, to me, there's no comparison. Now, I don't love crowded Major League Baseball stadiums anyway. Like, to me, one of the fun things about going to a Major League game or a minor league game is that a lot of times you're not closely packed in like a sardine like you are for a big football game, because baseball has a much more leisurely experience. Frankly, most baseball games are not massively crowded. And every time I go to a Major League game with my kids, like, when we walk into the stadium, I hope
you wander around.
Yeah, I hope it's not going to be very crowded because my kids are going to want to run around and they're going to want to go shop and get ice cream and I don't want to be like having to constantly get past like to have everybody turn sideways so we can walk down the aisle and go get an ice cream or whatever. If you have kids, I think people understand that. So to me, the fun of baseball is kind of sometimes the stadium not being that full and just being able to sit outside and have a beer, have a hot dog, and chill. And the game, unlike in football, where every football game is like so intense in terms of you just don't play very many of them. So every game has a different intense feel. If your favorite baseball team loses, like, okay, it's going to have to happen 60 times basically every year, even if you're one of the greatest teams of all time. I just find going to a baseball game to be a lot more of an enjoyable and cathartic experience than a lot of times the intensity that you feel if you go to a football game and you want your team to win so badly.
Yeah, baseball is a leisurely thing. There might be intense moments. You know, you might want to be there for the crucial inning or the crucial at-bat or whatever. Or if it's a close game, you know, at the end you want to be there. So my flight to Denver, that's where I was with the Titans everywhere on the road this year. Furthest trip they had was for Denver for the opening Monday night. That was the first flight I was on. I had no idea what to expect. I was nervous about that flight, I admit. And, you know, I didn't feel good about it going. But once I got off the plane, you know, I was on Southwest, middle seats were empty, you know, it was fine. I felt all right about it. I felt okay going the rest of the year as I did until December 13th. All of a sudden there was somebody next to me because Southwest started booking middle seats. And then for trips to Jacksonville, Green Bay, Houston, there was somebody next to me, I think on probably five of those six flights.
And it's a stranger. It's somebody you don't know. It's not like you're traveling with your wife or your kid.
Right. Yeah, I didn't like it. So I'd rather be at a baseball game than on those.
I think most people would, and that's why I brought it up, because they sent me an email and said, hey, your flights are pretty full, and it's likely somebody's going to be sitting next to you. And Dub, who is a producer on the show, was saying yesterday, you know, he got out and flew down to San Antonio where he's from, and they emailed him, and he's like, the whole flight's full, right? Because there have been so many flights canceled because of weather conditions and everything else. Usually,
I missed that the first time. I missed that the first time I had somebody next to me on the middle seat, so I was totally surprised. I don't know if I didn't get it from Southwest or if I just missed it.
Or if they sold a bunch of tickets later and they ended up being able to have that ticket sold. Usually at this time of the year, we are gearing up, if you are an NFL fan, for the combine. And people may make fun of us who like to sit and watch the 40s and see how guys look throwing the football and all the other different storylines that are embedded into a combine. You have covered a lot of combines. You talked about being able to hope to get back to normalcy. That would have been something normal for the NFL. What is the impact of the combine not happening going to be in your mind as it comes to the NFL draft? What are you hearing? I kind of tossed out the hypothesis. I can see how that could help big school athletes because their tape is out there and it may be easier to evaluate them going up against Power 5 competition as opposed to a smaller school guy. Might also be hard for a guy who's really good at an interview or somebody who's got something in their background that makes them a little bit nervous, but you want to have a conversation with them. You can't have those in-person visits. How is this going to impact, in your mind, what teams are able to do to get ready for? Because people forgot, but last year the combine, I believe, happened, right? So all that data was already in.
It was the last thing.
Yeah, all that data was in.
So pro days change a little bit. So I lean towards what you're saying. Like everything, I would think everybody would lean safer. Bigger school,
right, that's the idea.
Better paid, more stuff. But then I think you kind of make the counter move on that. Well, listen, everybody's going to play safer, and we've got a really good beat on this kid from, you know, Southeastern, you know, whatever. And everybody's going to be playing it safe. And I've got a really good feel about this kid. And, you know, he ran last instead of, you know, he'd go in the fifth. We could get him in the sixth. It'd be a really good value, and I have a really good feeling about him. I don't know how many teams are going to talk like that are very confident in their scouting thing and think that they can get a duel because everybody else is going to go safe and go big schools. So I think the gamesmanship maybe winds up being just the same. you know, the interpersonal stuff, though, you really have to be confident in your ability to Zoom. I'll use the Titans as an example. I mean, the Titans got fooled completely by Isaiah Wilson last year, who John Robinson admitted recently was not the same guy that they interviewed when he showed up. They got fooled by him in person. So now what's your confidence that they're not going to get fooled by a guy in Zoom? He said they're adding people to their Zoom conversations. Even if you're not a speaking person, maybe they add Clay Travis, who scouts a different region, to the Zoom meeting to see if he picks up on anything the guy says, any body language thing, you know. And then I've said this before, the draft is too late. So you can overanalyze every little thing. But you can have up to five Zooms with the guy. So you're really banking on everything you can pick up from a Zoom.
But what it's you crazy.
Is, you know, to talk to that guy's high school coach and everything. And they didn't go far enough with Isaiah Wilson, or too many people lied on Isaiah Wilson. And then you got to scrap all of those sources, including Kirby Smart. Kirby Smart's stock should be down with everybody in terms of what he's saying about players, because he gave a ringing endorsement to the Titans to hear the Titans tell it about Isaiah Wilson. And coaches are usually off the record with teams pretty candid about a guy. So, you know, you're on high alert for all of this stuff. And again, the Titans are the only one that missed, and I don't think there were problems with any Georgia guy being Georgia being misleading on any other guy, and I'm sure they had, you know, plenty. They've always got plenty of guys coming into the draft every year. But I think you got to generally be safe, because also everybody's worried, unless you're, you know, super safe, unless you're the Chiefs right now, unless you're Belichick, you know, about getting second guessed. If this guy doesn't hit, am I sound on what I had on him? A GM is going to be asking himself in some degree. And now more than ever, that soundness you have to really have wrapped up on the straight stuff, on the straight stuff. Well, look what he did at Michigan, or Michigan's probably not the best school anymore, but hey, you know, look what he did at Ohio State. Look what he did at USC. Look what he did.
It's interesting. We're talking to Paul Kaharsky. You can follow him on Twitter, and I'll tweet out a handle for him going forward. I think you guys are going to enjoy his show as well. When it debuts on March the 15th. We were talking about all these different quarterbacks all throughout the show, as we have been. There's a lot of drama surrounding which quarterbacks are going to be where. Did you see the video of Cam Newton kind of getting taunted by this this high school kid at the camp?
I did. I'm glad you brought this up.
Yeah. I'm curious what you think. So my I was kind of fired up talking about this earlier in the show. We talked about it a little bit on Monday. But this, to me, is an example of, and I know everybody out there, it's easy to say, oh, this next generation, they're making poor choices. Like, they could have said it about my generation. They could say it about your generation. That's been the trend line no matter what. It's actually funny. I was reading a good book recently, and there's like one of the earliest writings in cave, you know, sort of writing with words, right? Was, and this is like 8,000 years ago or something. Somebody was writing in the cave, like, kids today no longer respect their elders. You know, it's like 3950 BC or whatever.
It's
like, yeah, one of the oldest things that's ever been written on a cave by humans is kids no longer respect their elders. So, you know, if they thought it in 3950 BC, you know, I think it's unlikely that in, you know, whatever it is, 2021, that we're suddenly going to solve it for all time. But I do think the cell phones have accelerated disrespect in society in general. Because I'm just talking, I was talking about this earlier in the show. If you had told me when I was 14 or 15 years old that I was going to get to go to a camp and be anywhere near a Heisman Trophy winner, a NFL MVP, a national champion, and one of the greatest in terms of total accomplishment, a guy who went to a Super Bowl with a 17-1 team, whether you love or hate Cam Newton, that is a resume that doesn't exist hardly anywhere else in the history of football, what he's been able to accomplish. I would have been ecstatic to be in the same stratosphere as that guy. You know, like, oh my God, that's Cam Newton going to a camp. And I watched this video, and I think it's emblematic of where we are now, where if you are in any way a public figure, there are people chirping at you all day long, every day. And I saw that, and I give credit to Cam for the way he handled it. But the fact that that kind of interaction could happen at a camp where he's volunteering his free time to me is an utter indictment of that guy's coach, of that guy's parents, and of the culture of the team that he was on, that that could even happen, in my mind.
I do agree with you. I think there's a very interesting kind of study or certainly conversation to be had about what it does to changing the idea of celebrity proximity. Like, we think we're close to these people because we see them on our phones all the time.
Oh, that's a great
deal. Close to these people.
I want to cut you off for a minute, because that ties in with the people treated movie stars historically different than they did people who came on their television screens, right? But if you were on a TV show, you were considered to be more accessible because you came in old school to people's houses. Whereas if you were a movie star, you were larger than life and people had to go out and see you. And I hadn't even thought about that angle, but taking it even further down to everything's on a phone, everybody seems so much more accessible to you now, and so you don't have the same level of respect for them.
Tim, live, you're not starstruck in the least, and that respect for your accomplishments isn't there's nothing special necessarily about seeing them. Or I think it's a younger age, certainly. And my kid, he's met Brant Snedeker. You know, I told him about who this is when he was meeting him, so he thought that was cool. But, you know, I think also our kids are probably desensitized to meeting some of the athletes because, you know, they're in our – yours and my houses in a way, because of the way we talk about them, for a living and stuff. But I think it's a younger and younger age where there's something mystical about a hero, or that somebody's even a hero anymore because you see them so much, so close. So I think there's a proximity thing to it for sure that has changed things, like you said, and accelerated it. You know, the disrespect each generation put, I think it's faster now. But I will say this about Cam Newton, who I think is one of the strangest guys. The one up-close look I had at Cam Newton, I mean, he is an odd bird. The Panthers came and practiced with the Titans, and just like, this is how practice works. If a quarterback's hurt like Cam Newton was for those two or three days that we were with the Titans, everyone I've ever seen stands behind the guy who's taken the starting reps and, you know, is technically trying to take those reps, watching the play very closely, talking to that quarterback, talking to the coordinator, talking to the quarterback coach. Cam Newton was drawing with fans during, you know, some 7-on-7 easier stuff. And then he was walking around and wandering around and not involved with his team at all, which in a 2.5-day snapshot told me, like, that was not a guy I would want on my roster based on how he acted when he was not able to play. Which I think, you know, I mean, look, it's a very small snapshot, but based on the problems that he's had as a player since he got hurt, I don't know, maybe I overread into it. And a lot of people tell me I do overread into it. It tells me a bit about why he's not been successful, none of which says he deserves what he got from that kid.
No doubt. Can you come back with us to close out the show? I got a couple more questions.
Absolutely.
I want to hit with you.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Paul Kaharsky with us, NFL Hall of Fame voter, soon to be a Outkick Over the Top show member. I can't wait to see he and Jonathan Hutton and Chad Withrow when they debut on March the 15th. Also, we're going to have a big, fun, hopefully really joyous return of the NCAA tournament March 19th, downtown Nashville. Details on that forthcoming in the near future, but they will be doing a live show to get ready for tip as the NCAA tournament gets closer and closer. Paul, a couple of questions for you. You grew up in New Jersey, I believe. Are you blown away still by the response of the South to snow, and how would you assess the South's response to their most recent snowmageddon in your Nashville area?
Well, I will say that the early part of this was legitimately bad.
Yeah.
I mean,
Straight ice.
At my house, you know, 3.5 inches of ice that
yes.
when you stepped on it, you did not sink into. That's
yes.
a big issue.
It's weird.
Anywhere,
strange,
anywhere.
Even. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big issue anywhere. And nobody should have been out on that. And very few people were, which was good. I think the one thing that surprised me is how many people jump. I know I'm going to get in trouble with this. There's just this hillbilly effect, even in a nice suburban neighborhood, to throw a kid on an inner tube behind your pickup truck and go flailing around. I know one died from hitting a brick mailbox. I don't know why brick mailboxes exist. The only thing I ever hear about them is kids being killed, running into them on golf carts, and now and snow accidents. But, I mean, it's some really stupid stuff going on. And that ice was then below the snow. So
yeah.
I didn't have a problem with what was going on. And I didn't venture out myself. I don't venture out largely because most of the people on the road have no idea what they're doing. And so despite the fact that I think I can handle it, I'm going to get hit by one of these idiots. So I've got no interest in that. My son is 11, and many of his best friends have parents from Michigan. And so this was funny to me. The hills in range of our house were not satisfactory to my boy and his friends. And they were getting rides from Michigan parents. I would not have let Nashville or Florida parents drive them, but Michigan parents I was confident in. And they were driving them a mile or two away to Superior Hills. And so they would go for 3 or 4 hours a day to Superior Hills. And my son was reporting to me that the main roads, you know, half a mile from our house last, were fine. So once I knew that, but my road and the two roads you had to drive to get out of my subdivision were bad through yesterday. And I wasn't surprised that school was canceled in Williamson County, south of Nashville, even yesterday, because there's still a significant amount of ice and slush. And I just don't understand people's reluctance to stay the hell home, how they think that they are equipped to handle. Listen to me. If you're in Nashville or in the South and you have not grown up with some background driving in the snow, you are not equipped to handle it. Don't tell people otherwise. Don't convince yourself otherwise. Listen to people smarter than you. Stay home. Four-wheel drive is not the answer to everything. You are not equipped to handle it.
We're talking to Paul Kaharsky. You can follow him on Twitter, I believe, at Paul Kaharsky NFL. I will tweet out his handle when we are done with the show today, when the podcast goes up. A couple of other stories that we haven't gotten to you yet. This Deion Sanders story about saying that his gear had gotten stolen during the game. And then we wrote about it a little bit on Outkick. I'll be honest with you. I haven't followed every twist and turn. Then some people said his stuff didn't get stolen. What's the storyline here, and what do you think about it?
Deion Sanders is always like haphazard. There's always like haphazard confusion going on around him. He's an NFL Network analyst who didn't know who Kevin Byard was when he was having an all-pro season. Now, an analyst isn't going to know every player on every team, but if you're a defensive Hall of Fame defensive back, you should probably know defensive backs who are playing at an all-pro level. And he's just all talk. And, I mean, maybe he turns Jackson State into something fantastic, and that'd be great for Jackson State and for historically black colleges and universities, and that'd be a good development. But I am so annoyed by this guy. And, I mean, this is his first game, and they blow out some school I've never heard of, but which is a good development for them. And the storyline is that all of his stuff disappears, but then the school comes back and says his stuff didn't disappear. And there's all this confusion, and the story is somehow all about him. I just don't understand. And then what's the verdict on the story? Was his stuff gone or was his stuff not gone?
Did he somebody claims at Jackson that his stuff State was
take
stolen.
His stuff and preserve it? And then somebody at Jackson State said, we took his stuff to make sure it was safe. So why would they take his stuff to make sure it was safe? They're safe. Well, he probably had some very valuable stuff there. Well, if you have the kind of locker rooms that some of these, I don't know if they were home or away, but I mean, if he doesn't have a place to put stuff that's going to be judged safe, maybe don't take that stuff there. But I mean, it's just a wild, crazy story. And wild, crazy stories seem to follow him where he goes. I think he craves wild, crazy stories. I think he puts himself in situations where they're bound to happen. And I find it incredibly tiresome. I don't understand why people still like it.
We're talking to Paul Kaharsky, teeing off on Deion there, which is interesting in and of itself. I don't really have a strong opinion on Deion, one way or the other. Yeah, I know you, but that goes back to his NFL Network role, which was one thing that you were talking about. Yeah, you didn't like him on there. What do you think, by the way? We were talking. I said I was going to bring you on. You covered the Houston Texans for a long time. You covered the Jacksonville Jaguars, Indianapolis Colts, and certainly the Tennessee Titans. What do you think is going to happen with Deshaun Watson? Do you really believe that the Texans are going to move on from their 25-year-old quarterback? How does this story end, and when do you think it's resolved?
I mean, it all depends on who's more staunch about holding their ground. The thing is that the Texans would be wise to decide before the draft, because if they don't deal him before the draft and ultimately they end up dealing him, then they will have sacrificed getting a really high pick in this, and maybe players, but the really high pick in this draft. And then you've got to wait until April of 2020 to start to get the young people who are going to help your roster. And so I would think you've got to have an April deadline where push comes to shove in one way or another. If you're getting, and I don't know that they love any of the potential quarterbacks that are coming back to them, a Bridgewater or a Garoppolo or the kid from the Jets, Darnold, or Tua. I don't love any of those quarterbacks as an option, but, one of them might be, any of them maybe could be your guy and certainly could be your bridge to your guy, but I'd rather be drafting your guy or in position to trade up to draft your guy. They don't have a lot of draft picks. So it makes sense if this thing doesn't look like it's going to sort itself out, and it certainly doesn't now. I mean, it's ice cold. You got to make some headway with Watson to know that you've got a chance at breaking through to get him on the field this fall. Otherwise, you got to make a deal. So, and if you don't make a deal and he doesn't play for you this September, then you've mismanaged it even worse, and now you have to wait for the April draft in 2020.
20 days until your show officially debuts on March the 15th. I look forward to it, Paul Kaharsky. We will talk to you again hopefully soon.
Can't wait. Thanks for having me, Clint.
Yeah, no doubt. That's Paul Kaharsky, covers the NFL, does a fantastic job of it, and we'll have his show underway on March 15th. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. This has been Outkick. We appreciate you. We'll be back tomorrow, and then I'm hopping a flight to Mexico, getting to the warmth, but I'll be with you tomorrow morning again. This is Outkick. Go download the podcast, search out Outkick, search out Clay Travis. Appreciate you guys spending your morning with us. This is the Tuesday edition. Have fantastic days on Fox Sports Radio.